I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity pop culture, social issues and arts podcast. And we go live every Sunday morning right before brunch at about 11 a.m.
And we like to talk about the things that you're going to be talking to your pals about at brunch. So we take the things that have happened in the world during the week and we try and make sense of them and unpack them and make them relevant for our lives and therefore your lives.
So we are brought to you by Diet Coke, of course, in conjunction with their Because I Can campaign. And the lovely Laura Whitmore is championing this campaign in a big way. And she's actually on the phone with us right now. Laura, how is life?
Life is good. How's life with you?
Grand. The last time we bumped into you was at the launch of the Because I Can campaign in Dublin. I think you were home for a fleeting trip. Have you had a chance to come back since at all?
I have, but just for more fleeting trips. but I'm very lucky. I'm not too far money across the pond, but I've had numerous hen parties. A few of my friends are getting married this summer, so I've had 2 hen parties and I have another one to go, so I'm back and forth quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm at that stage as well where I have a different hen party or wedding or baby shower every second weekend.
I had a baby shower last Sunday, then next week is like a hen party, so it's a full-time job.
It really is. Like, my diary is just chock-a-block with buying presents, putting things together. It's impossible to keep up with everyone. It reminds me of that episode of Sex and the City where they're just like...
I was just going to say that we talked about this morning, because especially a few of my mates, like my single friends, and even just, you know, I'm not getting married or anything like that, but I'm like, I want a party. I want engagement gifts.
Yeah. It's like, when are we going to celebrate me in a big way? I know we get a birthday, but these are the people who are getting like 3 or 4 big days a year.
I know. How dare they?
How could they? So the Because I Can campaign, let's chat a bit about that first. The whole idea is all about, you know, trying things that you haven't tried before. But it kind of ranges from the bigger picture things like bungee jumping to little tiny pleasures that you just enjoy every day. What are your tiny daily pleasures that you just cannot go without?
Well, I suppose, I think, you know, we kind of live in an age where, you know, we're constantly comparing ourselves to other people and we need to do a million things. I feel one of my faults that sometimes I don't feel like I live in the now. I'm so busy thinking of what I'm doing next that I'm not, you know, concentrating on what I'm doing right now. So one of my, like, little guilty pleasures of what I try to do is have that now time at some stage in the day. And for me, it's something as simple as going to yoga in the morning.
Yeah.
Or just kind of, you know, and just being present in that little moment, or just having a time when you're just not on your phone, you know? And it sounds like something, really obvious, but a lot of us don't do that, you know? A lot of us just constantly, God, you know, I had dinner with my mates the other day and we're all on our phone. And I was like, girls, put down the phone.
Let's
be in the net. But we all do it, you know, and it's just the world we live in, and it's so fast paced that sometimes you just need to have a break and just breathe.
And you don't even notice you're doing it. That's the problem. You only notice when you don't have the phone. That's when you feel like something's odd. It's never
you're
a
naked.
Case. Sorry?
You feel like you're naked. You don't have your phone in your hand.
Missing a limb. So you do your yoga in the morning. The one thing that I am trying to do, and I was thinking of doing it in conjunction with the campaign, was challenging myself to get up earlier in the morning to exercise, because it's the one thing I cannot do. And I think the best time to do it is in the summer when the mornings are a little bit brighter. It feels a little bit less painful dragging yourself out of the bed. But for some reason, I just talk myself out of it every single morning. I can't
do that. I have a massive conversation in my head sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I've got 10 more minutes in bed and then I have to get up or I won't make the yoga class. And I'm like, oh, I've 5 more minutes left. Oh, now I'm going to be a little bit late, so I'll probably be a bit late. I'm like, Laura, if you just got up, when you wake up, if you just get up, you'll be fine. But it's just conversation that we have in our head, that's just right so much time. Yeah.
You're literally negotiating with yourself. You're like, if I do 5 minutes more in bed, I won't wash my hair, but sure, I have a load of dry shampoo there, I'd be grand. Not a bother.
It's like some sort of really messed up Shakespeare monologue that goes on in my head sometimes. Like a turmoil of Hamlet or something.
Yeah, the two different characters.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, I was given some advice by someone, which was, in the morning when you get up, make your bed. The most important thing to do is make your bed, because it sets you up well for the day. it's like you've achieved a goal.
Yeah.
So I always try to do that. And it sounds something like really stupid, but to go home at night time and then get into a bed that's already made is supposed to be quite good for you mentally.
But see, I love that. That's so good, because it's the small wins and they all add up. And I think sometimes when we set ourselves these big, massive, lofty ambitions, it just feels a little bit too intimidating and you don't even want to take the first step. Whereas if I get up at 6:30, okay, if I don't go to the gym, at least I got up. So maybe that's how I set my goals for the next while. Yeah. It's like a small win.
We're all very hard on ourselves. I'm my worst critic, and sometimes I'm like, Laura, you don't do enough, and what you do, and you don't know what to do. And I have all these negative thoughts. And, you know, sometimes you just need to be not so hard on ourselves. Like, and, you know, if you don't get up at 6 a.m. And you sleep until 7 a.m., it's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you can maybe walk home from work instead of getting the bus, or, you know, something like that, pull it back another way. But try not to be too hard on ourselves as well, because, I don't know, I feel like so much pressure from other people, and then we put it on ourselves as well. That can be quite detrimental, you know?
Massively. Speaking of goal setting, did you always know, like, are you a big planner, or do you tend to, like, I'm the type of person that does not think in 5-year increments. I'm thinking tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. Are you, what's your style of planning, like goal setting?
Like, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. I don't even, I'm a live for each day kind of person. I think sometimes can be annoying for the people. Like, my mates are like, what are you doing next Tuesday? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, or, you know, the weekend. And so I take it day by day. Which I think in this industry, for me anyway, you kind of have to, because things chop. And actually, most people, whatever their job is, things, you know, we have routines within reason, because things chop and change so much.
That's true. But there is an element, I think, or a perception that, say, with someone like you who's enjoyed such massive success, that it was kind of an element of luck, or you were in the right place at the right time, and because it was a competition originally. But to win the MTV role, I don't buy that with someone like you. I always think, no, these are the people that she's planning this. Like, she was living in Bray and she was making plans. Like, is that true?
God, I wish I was that. Like, I suppose it's, you have your dreams and you have, like, I kind of believe a bit in visualization. Like, you know, think about what you want and aim for it. I sometimes don't know what the journey is going to be like, but I know what the destination I would like to be. I know where I kind of want to go-ish. But I don't know how I'm necessarily going to get there. And I think with life as well, things happen, you know, and you don't always have control. And it's what you do with that opportunity. It's what you do with that platform. And I suppose something like the MTV competition, because it was my first break, you kind of put yourself out there, but you don't know what way it's going to go. And all you think about is, you know, if I don't win this, I have someone's email address, or I can get my foot in the door some other way. So I don't necessarily know what I'm doing. I just try to do the best with what I have. And that's my plan.
It's like you're almost visualizing what you will feel like when you have success, rather than planning out every single step of the way. And then I suppose you're opening yourself up for massive disappointment if it doesn't go exactly the way you've planned.
Yeah, and also you don't really know, like, I don't know, 10 years ago when I started, the TV is very different now than when I started as well, because you've got so much stuff with, like, online. I remember years ago, you know, someone told me that, you know, you'd be watching TV through your phone or through your laptop more than you watch it on television. I wouldn't believe them. But that's what people do now. You know, you don't watch TV the way you used to watch TV. Everything is made differently. You know, Instagram didn't exist beforehand. I work on shows now where, yes, things go into a TV guide, but then you're also asked to put it on your social, because as many people see it there too. And we have more control, I suppose. We have more of a voice. Which is great, positive in one way, but also is a huge responsibility as well. So you have to, like, use that power wisely. I think as well, like, it's also new. So when you try to think what's going to be in 5 years' time, God only knows what the state of, like, what this industry is going to be like in 5 years. Maybe it'll change again. Who knows? So you just kind of have to evolve as it evolves. You know, as people, we always change. We're constantly changing. And you just grow and evolve as everything else does around you. And that's the excitement, isn't it, really, of life?
Particularly, like, the industry is changing so quickly, like, quicker than ever before. When you think about our parents and jobs for maybe 25 years, it's not what's done now. And even the digital landscape.
You know, my mom's first job, she's joined civil service when she was 17 and she left when she was just before she was 60.
There you go.
Like one job. I've had a million jobs in 10 years.
Yeah, it's alien to us even that idea of being in the same position in 2 years' time feels like, no way.
Do you wonder if you think that's bad though, because are we ever happy? You know when you were saying that end goal, will I ever be happy? Will I ever get a job? Because every time I do something, then I'm like, okay, what's the next thing I can do? Mm-hmm. And in fact, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I've just been content.
That's what we're chatting about, this millennial. We need to overachieve. And like someone like you, who everyone would consider a massive overachiever, you're still wrecking your own head about what's next or what's the next achievement. We never feel, it's completely different to our parents were delighted if they had a secure job and they had a pension set up. That was a massive achievement for them. For us, it's so much more, emotive or dreamy, or, you know, what it's really hard to define what happiness and success is for us, because we're always chasing the next win.
And we're comparing ourselves to things that are not actually achievable, because you're looking at people online and that's not real life, you know? Mm-hmm. I suppose maybe years ago it's like looking through glossy magazines and, you know, you're looking at the airbrushed image, which isn't actually the real image in front of you, and you think that's what reality is, and it really blurs our vision because what is real and what's not real, and we're trying to constantly compare ourselves. And I think that gets maybe even more difficult these days because you think people are, it's sad, you think people are happy, and then, in recent times you see people who are dealing with depression who can seem from the outside the happiest person in the world, or anxiety issues. And it's great now, I feel that so many more people are talking about this.
It's obviously massive with everything that's happening with Bloggers Unveiled and this kind of shift in the influencer marketing area. Have you followed any of that?
With bloggers?
The bloggers and the sort of, influencer is nearly a dirty word at the moment.
Do you think? I suppose it's, for my industry, I don't know, it's weird. Because when the first batch of influencers started, they kind of made it their own. They kind of, I always say fair play to kind of the first, like the Zoellas and the Tanya Birds and people who kind of were the first group, and YouTubers like Castley, because they were just doing it because they love doing it. And now it's probably a new generation of people who are doing it for different reasons. And I think that's going to, and because so many people, it's now maybe in an oversaturated market, that will it have the same impact it did 2 years ago? Will it have the same impact in 10 years' time?
And it's hard to know what to believe. Obviously, there's been massive revelations about photoshopping and products being touted that aren't actually used by the person. It's becoming a little bit more transparent, I think. Maybe people aren't buying it as quickly as they were.
Yeah, I think you take it with a pinch of salt now. When you see someone like holding a product in their hand and you're like, oh my God, I love this. And you're like, do you love this? Or do you like the money in your bank account? And I think you have to take it with a pinch of salt. Same with advertising though, when magazines first came out and branding. Branding is something that's always existed. It's just an evolved form now, isn't it? And we're all influencers in a way. Like, I'm influenced by my friends, by people around me. And now it's just a bigger market. But it's always existed. It's just a more extreme version now.
100%. I think the key is always pairing back and just aligning yourself with things that really mean something to you and making sure it fits with what your message is, rather than taking quick wins and quick, I wear this tan, or, choose wisely. And there's nothing wrong with good branded partnerships.
If it's real, and it's real. I've never been associated with a brand that I don't like. And that's the same. I remember even like working with, as a ambassador for Diet Coke. I'm a massive fan of Diet Coke. All my mates know that.
Yeah.
So you have to be true to you. And I think you get that. You look at Instagram and you know what's real and you know what's not real. Mm-hmm. And I think you have a responsibility as well. I'd probably be a lot more well off if I said yes to everything. But you have to, for your authenticity with your followers, for your authenticity in your job, with your friends, you have to stay true to yourself. And I do, my mom always, said this to me. She's like, you're very lucky that you've got a platform. If you have a platform, use it wisely.
Yeah.
And you do have responsibility. I have a certain age group of young women who might follow me. So I do feel you need to be conscious of that, or what you do, especially when you do things that are in the public eye.
Yeah, that's it. And it's thinking long term, like, how does this serve me long term? Okay, this might be a quick buck, but long term, what's my message? And exactly, thinking of the people that do follow you.
And working with brands that have the same message that you have, that positivity, because there's so much negativity online sometimes. You have this whole, you know, people being trolled and all this stuff. And I used to think that was something that just happened, maybe, you know, to people in the public eye. But it's not like, you know, I've got younger brothers who talk about stuff that happens in school, and it happens to everyone. And I think it's really important that, you know, we're all in this together. We're all on this earth together for however long we may be. Mm-hmm. And all we should do is, like, help each other and spread positive messages. Life is because I can. And I think that's really important, too, that you shouldn't just be put in a box, this is what you should do. Break that box, break down those walls, and do what you want to do, because you've got one life, so live it.
Love it. Live it, love it. Last question. I have to ask you, are you watching Love Island? I'm sure you are. And what are your predictions? Who are you loving and who are you hating?
It's really hard at this stage, because I started watching for the first time last year, and I only came in about halfway through. And I know, I was in New York on Monday and Tuesday, around where they film Love Island. Trying to get the inside gossip. And so I actually missed watching the show, but I was getting the inside gossip. And just to be like, who's really nice? What are they really like? Yeah. And it's mad because you kind of forget, like last year, I don't know if you watched last year, but last year, Chris, for example, he wouldn't have even been in the show at this stage.
Okay, yeah.
He was late. There's so much more to come. I'm a big fan of Dani Dyer because she actually did a show I hosted called Survival of the Fittest. And she left one day because she dislocated her shoulder during one of the challenges. And she was so lovely. So she left. She did the first day because it was like a boys versus girls show. We had a big challenge. She ended up, and like we were so excited to have her. Danny Dyer, her dad, was like Instagramming about it. And then we basically broke her. So I'm so happy to see her on Love Island. I don't know if her dad was so happy, but I think she's coming across really well. I like her and Jack. And those teeth are too white for my liking. You'd be blinded by it.
Blinding. But I think they're genuine. I love the two of them together. I think Dani is the sweetest, like, character. I don't know. She's the one for me that's not coming across as, I feel like they're a little bit more aware of themselves this year and how big it was last year. Obviously, last year's success was massive.
And you know what, you see that with other shows as well, when people kind of, you can see them playing the game a little bit more. Mm. And maybe we're more conscious of it. So the first few series, you know, people didn't really know what it was. It was like when Big Brother started, you know, and then people were going in with maybe with a different kind of aim. But then I do think with shows like this, and from having worked on shows like this and working on I'm a Celeb and Survival and things like that, people can go in with a game plan and people can go in trying to be something they're not. But when you're watched 24 hours a day, you can't keep that facade up. And like, they've only been in there, what now, week and a half?
I think it's a week and a half, yeah.
Week and a half, yeah. So, you know, people might still be playing games. This show has gone on for 8 weeks, so by the end of it, you forget. People do forget the cameras are there, and they do forget. And there are real feelings, you know. You see real tears, and they are real feelings.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glued to it anyway, so really looking forward to seeing.
Who do you like?
I love Dani and I love Jack, but I was mad about Niall. I thought he was fabulous. I'm devastated he's left. Loved him. Can't stand Adam. Liking Megan. I'm kind of getting on board with Megan. I think she's a bit clever, maybe, which you kind of tend to keep the clever ones at arm's length a little bit. I like seeing someone that's not maybe as conniving. I feel like she's kind of aware of how things will be perceived, maybe, like, you know what we're talking about. But I do like
her. What do you think of
I'm having none of them. I'm having none of them. When he pulled Megan up, that, now I missed last night's episode and the night before, but when he pulled Megan over in front of Alex and shifted her, I just thought, I haven't seen anything like that since primary school. Like, not that we would have been shifting in primary school, but it was so fucking bold. Like, I did not appreciate
it. But it was so much for attention. Do you know what's quite funny? This is the first year that Carmel Whitmore, my mom, has watched this.
Oh, yeah.
And she is obsessed. And what's so funny about when I talk to her about it, she's like, you can kind of see bits of people you know in it.
That's
quite extreme, but you're like, you can see bits of yourself, of people, how you'd react to that, you know. And if you're talking about going back to like playground and schoolyard, there is that little mentality. We can all relate to it. And I think that's why, you know, people love watching Love Island so much, because you can relate to things. I know it's a little bit extreme, but at the end of the day, it's relationships, isn't it?
The conversations around love and dating never, ever get old. That is what it is. That you will never find the answers, and that's probably why we will not stop talking about it. Like, there's so many countless variables of what can happen in that house when you put a certain amount of personalities in there, that it just makes for endless conversation starters. And like you're saying, you say, oh, that kind of reminds me of a situation that I had with such and such, but you know, I chose this and they chose that. It never gets tired, ever.
I remember last year someone was talking about like Olivia, and they're like, she's such a bitch, and I'm like, let's be honest, we all have a little bit of Olivia in us.
Yeah.
You
say, okay, but I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, okay, that's rotten. But I'm also I know exactly what's in her head, because I've thought exactly the same things. Like, she broke up with Chris and then he didn't want her back. And of course she goes chasing back after him. I've done it.
But I also think she was breaking up with him to test him. Like,
she was.
She was being mean to him. She was also quite vulnerable and insecure. And that was her way, classic female, like her way of dealing with it. To keep herself safe was to break up with him or to be mean to him. But you could see she was just a girl that wanted him to turn around and be like, will you be my girlfriend? That's what she wanted.
Yeah.
She just had a really bad way of doing it. But we've all done that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he sat in the dressing room then and he was having none of her, and he had been obsessed with her up to that point. She said, we're over. And he finally went, do you know what, Grant? We are over. He was giving her no hop at all, and she was losing. That's when she lost it. I was like, I would have lost it at that point as well, probably.
She's losing the power.
Yeah, the power. It's all about the power.
The power. It's all about those power struggles in relationships.
It is. It really is. Listen, I'm going to let you go, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
I'd like to talk to you all day.
I know. We're having great chats. We're having great chats. Look, I probably see you again soon with something to do with Because I Can. We'll probably cross paths again during the campaign.
Let's do it. Yoga class.
Unreal. You'll have to give me a shout if you're in Dublin and we'll get that in the calendar.
Make the bed first though. Always remember, make the bed.
I might just make the bed and skip the class, and that, you know, that would be my bit done for the day. But I'll support you fully.
Make the bed when you're still in it.
Yeah, exactly. Make the other side. Right, listen, have a good one. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks. See you love.
Bye. The Diet Coke Because I Can campaign is about carefree fun with friends and celebrating the things in life that make you feel good. Take part in the Diet Coke Because I Can series by following hashtag Because I Can. Okay, Cassie, so you can come back now because me and my best mate are finished chatting. So,
okay, thanks for welcoming me back. Just to catch up here now and to bring people up to speed. So I obviously have been replaced
By the Whitmore. As my new bestie.
And just, I don't know whether it's coincidental or planned that any interaction we've had to have with the Whitmore on behalf of Before Brunch, I've been unavailable for, or it's been at a time that I can't make it.
Like that's, you know, I have to work around Laura's schedule. And
okay, so
she's a very busy person, as am I. So it's when we find the time, we just have to make it work.
Yeah.
So cool. I'll let you know how our yoga class goes.
I did overhear that now when I was standing outside the door of the studio that I, you know, frequent every week with you and have done for quite a time now. But
yeah.
So that was nice to hear that outside.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
Gorgeous. Like, and so did you guys do the intro? Do you want to jump in?
No, you've done the intro already.
Okay.
Yeah. So what would you though? I like the topic of early morning exercise.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Because I can't do it. And I do feel, if I get up even 10 minutes early, like I had a breakfast meeting this morning at 8 o'clock. I woke up at 5 very briefly and started panicking about having to get up at 6:30.
Oh, yeah.
Because 6:30 for me is early, even though that's so not early for the majority of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I was freaking out and I was like, will I just get up now? And will I just thought about it all morning. The only time my mind actually quietened was when I just got the fuck up. Like, we torture ourselves in bed in the morning.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We know that getting out of bed is the hardest thing, but once you do it, you feel great and brilliant. Mm-hmm. I generally get up at like near 6:30, 6:45, because I live so far from town now and I have to commute in. And it's not as bad now with the schools being off. That's the most Irish thing to say, but it's not as bad because the traffic isn't as bad. But I always found that at the start of the week, it was a lot easier to get up, and then it gets to kind of like Thursday and you just can't. And like this morning, I wanted to get up early and do a bit of work before I went into work. But my alarm went off. I woke up and I just couldn't get out of bed. But I didn't go back to sleep. I was lying there awake. And generally, I'd like pick up my phone and have a scroll, which they say is the worst thing to do.
It's the only thing that wakes me up, though.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of just like bring myself into the day. Mm. But I got, I don't know how I ended up on it. I got into this this kind of internet phenomenon. I'd always do.
Oh, wow. Phenomenon.
Phenomenon of people eating Tide Pods. So it was just, this it was 45 minutes of my morning wasted, and the most disturbing way to start the day.
That's your problem, though.
That like, isn't, it was entirely my fault.
That is your, like, that's just you being weird. Like, that wouldn't happen. I need to scroll through stuff to kind of get my eyes to be able to focus or something.
Yeah, it just, it started with a meme where someone was like, Gen Z are the people who ate the Tide Pods.
You
not
know
millennial.
Tide Pods is so last year, by the way.
I know, but I never really engaged with it. And I was like, what are these? And like, I saw a thing, I was like, once and for all, what are these Tide Pods? I thought they were just like weird. I expected something like Pixie Sticks, like really weird sugary sweets.
They're
or something.
Washing.
They're fucking
powder.
Washing tablets.
Yeah.
They're like laundry detergent tablets. They're poisonous.
People don't actually eat them. I think the buzz is that they look really edible.
No, people ate them. What? People ate them and ended up in hospital. And it became this kind of viral challenge of like, you know, that neck nomination kind of thing, which then led me on to viral challenges and the people who have died from doing viral challenges. So 45 minutes this morning, total write off. I just feel like I'm surrounded by idiots in this world. And I just really wish I had gotten out of bed at 6:30 when my alarm had gone off. I'd be a lot further along in my day now than I am. Although it did lead to a very interesting conversation with the barista about natural selection.
Okay, you have to tell me about the conversation.
Just that whole thing of people
eat the Tide Pods because they should probably...
That's the universe. That is the universe's natural selection of our century, of our lifetime.
I love like the Darwinian awards, the like stupidest ways that people have died.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked at them?
I've looked at that Wikipedia page of stupid ways people have died on the internet.
There's a whole book of the Darwinian awards that literally breaks down all the terribly stupid ways that people have died. It's brilliant.
Yeah. So it was hard to even have sympathy for these people who had eaten the Tide Pods and ended up in hospital.
Yeah. So Tide Pods was a tangent that we didn't expect to be chatting about today.
So what the point of the story is that trying to enforce good habits where you get out of bed early and you can exercise in the morning will be more beneficial to you than laying down there on your phone and reading shit on the internet.
Yes. When I do get up early, I get so smug. I'm like, I am ahead of everyone else. Mm. I feel real cozy, like, oh, no one even knows I'm here. Like, no one's going to contact me because everyone's asleep and I'm just on my own in the world. But it's happened once or twice in my life, and I can remember the one or two times that I've actually gotten up and did some work. Or I think I read recently that if you get up and do something that you really enjoy for the extra hour that you don't get the hour to do in the evening, like maybe you read a book or something in the morning. I think that might be my buzz, that I get up. We recently got some new outdoor furniture for the balcony, and I might get up early while the mornings are nice and read my book on the balcony for an hour. I think that might be a nice morning.
That'd be a lovely thing. So this is I've been reading a lot about this kind of idea of forming habits and things that will be a lot more beneficial to you in your life. And I came across Laura Vanderkamp, who is a time management expert and the author of Off the Clock: How to Feel Less Busy While Getting More Done. And she has this whole theory which actually builds on a theory by Daniel Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize for psychology for this theory. And his theory is that we have two selves. We have the experienced self and we have the remembering self, right? And that,
okay,
so this is quite a complex one. It's taken,
why are you saying that as if I'm not going to get it? Like, I understand.
I'm looking at
complex,
I'm just,
ideas.
Okay, I'm gonna just for my own self and for
Cassie's
people.
Like, Megan, you can go and get a cup of tea now and I'll just speak to the audience that understands complexities. I'll get it, I think.
Okay. So, well, I didn't get it straight away. I had to read a lot about it because it's very weird, right? So okay. we obviously live in our experiencing selves. Our experiencing selves are the people who make the decisions for the now, of the now, of the moment, obviously.
And they make those decisions from a place of I'm hungry or I'm like feeling.
Convenience.
Okay.
Right. And then we have our remembering selves. So our remembering selves are retrospective and they're the people who look back on past memories.
Mm-hmm.
Again, fairly easy to follow.
But we identify like patterns. Like if yes. I'm hungry and I eat, I feel better.
We perceive our identity to be our remembering self. So the way our remembering self thinks about us is what we identify as our identities or whatever, right?
Okay.
The difficulty in this is that there's a massive discrepancy between what the experienced self does and what the remembering self wants us to do. So it's very hard to think about the remembering self when you're in the moment.
So e.g.,
mm-hmm.
I'm in bed in the morning and my remembering self is like, if you get up early, you are going to feel good.
Yes.
Because this has happened. I've read that this happens. It's happened to me and I know it to be true.
Yes. But it's the more rational, logical part of it.
Yes. But my experiencing self says, I am so warm and so cozy and it is cold out there and I need more sleep because I only got 7 hours last night.
Yes. Yeah, so your experiencing self will logic your remembering self out of it as well because you will say, I'm tired today. I won't do that today. I will do that tomorrow.
Mm.
I don't have to do it today. Today is the exception, right?
Like my experiencing self gets things quicker than you because this took you a lot longer. Okay, got it.
Yeah, okay. But my remembering self is an expert on this now, right?
Okay.
So Laura Vanderkamp, the one who has written this How to Feel Less Busy While Getting More Done book, which is doing phenomenally well, actually has built on this theory and said that there's a third element to our personality called the anticipating self.
Okay.
And so that we should try operate in the anticipating self in order to make memories for the remembering self. There's loads and loads of stuff to read about this. It's basically that your days will pass pretty much, won't even transcend into the remembering self memory if you don't do something exceptional. And I don't mean exceptional like go on holidays or whatever, but I mean something that is different outside of your routine. So if you're sitting there scrolling on your phone and you do that multiple days of the week, your brain will not remember that period of time. It's just so mundane that it almost checks it out and chucks it out of your long-term memory.
Okay.
So if we operate with this conscious decision to be in the anticipating self, we will create much better lifestyles for ourselves and much better memories for ourselves, which creates more long-term happiness.
This kind of, I don't know if this is on the point or off the point, but I remember reading recently, if you have trouble with remembering if you've turned your straightener on or off or the oven, you make an animal noise when you do it because then you're disrupting it and you won't forget whether you did it or not because it's no longer routine.
Yes, so it's probably to this whole theory again of what sticks and what doesn't. And basically Laura Vanderkamp says that the entire secret to success and happiness is asking yourself, did my anticipating self want to do this? So if
I'm
you're
lost there,
so if it's complicated, okay?
Oh.
So if you're struggling to make a decision or you're trying to do something, ask yourself, does your anticipating self want to do this? I.e., do you want this to be something that you secure in your long-term kind of memory for your remembering self? Is this something that you had decided to do a long time ago and you're finally now getting around to do it and then you should just do it?
But you see, that's what we do when we listen to our remembering self. Like, I don't really see the difference because that is what you're saying. It's like, I know I'll feel good if I get up now.
Yeah, but
that's the anticipating self.
It's for new experiences. So it's like the ability to kind of like, I think it's having more.
Oh, like, okay.
You know, it's because the remembering self is going to pull you up on things and be like, that felt good when you did that before.
Yeah.
And maybe you incidentally, like you accidentally do things in your experiencing self that feel good. And then your remembering self.
Okay.
You know, remembers them.
Okay.
You know, basically the whole idea, I think, simplified down in the most like genuine way is to just
don't have to simplify it that much.
All right, just for everybody involved, myself included, and Laura Whitmore if you're still listening, is to ask yourself, basically, is this something that I have wanted to do for a long time that I'm putting off because it's easier to just not do it now? And if like, you know, the way you always tell yourself, I'll do that tomorrow, it's procrastination, I'll do that later, I will do that someday, I will book that holiday, I will do whatever. That if it's something that your anticipating self really wants to happen, just do it in your experiencing self if you can. obviously.
Okay. I have a simpler one that I live by, which is, it was by Stephen Pressfield. It's called The War of Art. I think I've told you about it 100 mm-hmm. times.
Live, laugh, love.
And that's not what it is or anything like, yeah, okay, thanks. But I do think I said on the call to Laura at one point, I was like, live it and love it. And then, you know.
Yeah, I heard that. That's why like, I did that.
Who are you?
I was listening outside the door with tears streaming down my face. Listening to Before Brunch by Megan and Laura.
That has a ring to it.
No, it doesn't.
But it's Stephen Pressfield, and he just says, you are always going to feel resistance when you're trying to elevate yourself to a better plane. Like if you're mm-hmm. trying to do something that's really going to make a shift in your self, or, you know, get you closer to being your authentic self. So it's kind of spiritual. And in the book, he's very spiritual and he talks about muses and angels, but you can read it and eliminate that aspect of it. But he's like, feel the resistance and speak to the resistance and know that there's resistance there because what you're trying to do is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just beat resistance, then you're going to get closer to that self that you visualize yourself as. And we obviously spoke about this, was it last week or the week before? I think the week before, about millennials and how we visualize ourselves and
yeah.
how we would imagine we would look if we were really successful or really happy. And so in that sense, I think this kind of way of thinking works for me because that's how I operate. It's mm-hmm. like we've said before, I go to the gym so that I can look like the way I'm visualizing myself look. So he's like, visualize your authentic self. Know that resistance is stopping you from getting up because it doesn't want you to be your authentic self. And know that if you beat that resistance, you're getting closer to being who you're visualizing.
Yeah. I think that this, like, this kind of complex thought and like this constant concern and anxiety amongst our generation and millennials is really, really evident at the moment. Like I was reading a piece on Inc. by Melanie Curtin, and she surveyed like 300 millennials. She noticed that when she was on a plane and on holiday, she was seeing people stress out. And she did a survey and realized that 67% of millennials said they feel an extreme pressure to succeed.
Mm.
And I think that this being conscious of your thoughts and your actions and what you want to achieve in this sort of idea of my current self, my future self, the self that has always wanted things, will help alleviate that pressure because it helps people to identify more and more what their own individual idea of success is. Rather than, I think we look a lot at other people around. Of course we do. We're surrounded by social media. We're surrounded by advertising. We're surrounded by the success of others. It's very easy to look to other people and think that, well, they're more successful. That's what success is. I need to go achieve that. And of course it's not going to result in happiness because it's not what your inherent self wants. It's not what appeals to your values. But to really stop and think about these things and ask yourself, is this something that I want to have in my long-term memory? Is this going to make me happy? Can I do this? Is this something that I think about all the time? Is this something that I want to achieve? I think will help people to find that kind of that element. Like I know I'd say 70% of my friends are traveling the world or living abroad. And I often struggle with that idea of, why am I in Dublin? Am I in Dublin because I feel a pressure to succeed in my career? Am I in Dublin because I like it? Should I not go and experience a year in Sydney? Should I not go and be in Canada for a while?
Mm.
Will I have success there? Will I be happy there? And it's a very hard, because there's so much pressure, peer pressure around to travel. It's a very hard one to say.
But like the whole exercise of looking at what your values are and therefore why you're motivated to achieve a certain thing has helped me with my travel guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did travel. And obviously there's two prongs to the jealousy I feel when I'm scrolling through Instagram. I'm jealous of the people who are abroad and traveling the world and seeing amazing things and, you know, getting amazing pictures on Instagram. Mm. And I'm also severely jealous of the people killing it in their careers. And I think the career side of things matters more to me, and my experiential self might look at the travel photos and go, fuck, I'm really jealous. But my remembering self and the self that I know I really am and my real values are, I am not willing to take a career break right now, and I'm really happy with where I am. Like, I love my work, and I wouldn't probably be here if I had of stepped back and got off the ladder. Because in the industries we're in,
you do have to.
You
keep
can't
on, yeah.
leave if you get off the carousel. You're not coming back. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of it is networking and
yeah.
If you get off that ladder, you come back, you don't know anyone in the industry.
No, and I think that you know it in yourself as well. It's just hard to admit. Like, I'm the same. I think about work and my career far more than I think about travel and being off and exploring the world. Now, don't get me wrong, I like holidays and I like traveling, and I have done a bit of traveling. But for me, I get a lot of happiness from not just my career, but the creative process and working.
Yeah.
And being creative, and that's more important to me. But it's an alien concept to people, because doesn't being on a beach seem so appealing? But I think there is also a lot. What is really, really helpful is to acknowledge the disparity between your perceived experience and the reality of your experience. So, like, I can picture myself tanned and gorgeous on a beach, lying down and drinking a cocktail and being surrounded by friends, and that's what I would like. But the reality is that I would be sunburnt to fuck in the shade, covered in a thick layer of sun cream, probably bitten to fuck with mosquitoes, very, very sweaty, frizzy hair, not looking gorgeous, not feeling good about myself, and probably then just drinking my worries away and then vomiting in the shade. So, like,
in the shade,
in reality, the things like the Instagram lifestyle, that vision just is never going to be possible for
yeah
me.
That's a good point. And I know myself and my motivations that when I go on holiday, I only really enjoy a holiday. I love the way Helen Gurley Brown put it, actually, the editor of Cosmo back in the 60s. She said, go on holidays on a full belly. She was a workaholic, and for her, a full belly was you're worked out. Like, you have done so much work, you've achieved so much, and you can go on holidays on that, like, full belly of work.
Yeah.
And that is definitely how I feel. If I take a break and I know that I've done so much the last few weeks and I have achievements that are tangible that I've worked on and that were successful, or even if they weren't successful, I've worked on them, I'll enjoy that relaxation time so much more than holidays I've taken where I don't know where my career is at. Because
yeah,
obviously we've all had those moments.
There was an interesting study by, this is going to be the last thing I say, by Travel Zoo last year. It was featured on The Times in an article by Leonie Corcoran, and it found that 47% said that social media is the biggest driving factor in their holidays and choosing their holidays and in choosing the experiences that they have on holidays. And a third said they are booking their trips whether they think the destination or activity will be likely to impress people. So one third of people are choosing their holidays based on what they think that people will perceive of their holiday, and nearly half of people are choosing to do activities to put them on social media.
That I always wonder. I see some people on social and I know that their only motivation for doing a certain thing or going a certain place was to get the picture
for the gram.
For the likes. Like, you can see that they wouldn't have probably done it if social media didn't exist.
I will admit that I sat on my stationary Vespa.
I was just going to say, did you get the Vespa for the gram?
I didn't get the Vespa for the gram. I got the Vespa because my anticipating self has always wanted a Vespa, and I want to put that into things.
I don't know if that's the best use of anticipating self.
Yeah, well, look, I was actually talking to a friend very drunkenly, and I was like, I've always wanted one. And she was like, you just need to go get it. And it was literally like the next day, and it was a great decision. But I can't drive it. My dad won't let me take it out of the garden, so I did just sit on it for the gram. For my story, which you then took and shared.
I'm getting in touch with Bloggers Unveiled.
Yeah.
Because
I don't think I qualify.
You're not being real.
Who's real? No, I mean, I didn't even have my helmet on. I didn't look like I was moving. I just sat there, which is all I've been able to do for the last week, is sit on my Vespa in the sun. It's been fucking glorious, so I don't regret a thing.
Sounds gorgeous. Right, Cassandra, sorry that your time is cut short this week.
I just don't feel like I've had enough time.
I had other obligations, other mates to chat with, sorry. But look, it's all you next week again. Everyone will be delighted to hear.
Yeah, we should do a poll. No, actually, no, that's soul destroying.
That will hurt you.
That will kill me.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not do
just
that.
Just put in nearly all the groundwork now for the last couple of episodes, and I'm being pushed out slowly and surely.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. The Diet Coke Because I Can campaign is about carefree fun with friends and celebrating the things in life that make you feel good. Take part in the Diet Coke Because I Can series by following hashtag Because I Can.